Former Lieutenant Governor of Mississippi, Clarksdale, Mississippi, April 2nd, 1974.
When have you just first finally summarized your own political career?
Well, it's been rather limited. I was at the local level here in the city of Clarksdale, sir. I was the municipal judge. And then from the period of 1955 through January 1960, a four-year term, I was the district attorney for the 11th Judicial District, comprised of four counties in this Delta cotton farming area. Then in 1959, sought election to the governor's office unsuccessfully again in 1963. In 1967, I was elected lieutenant governor, serving 1968 through 1972. In the 1971 election for the governorship, I was again unsuccessful. That has been the extent of it.
What prompted you to run for governor the first time, from sort of being pretty much a political unknown in Mississippi?
For a long time, I think probably from the after graduation from high school, I had thought that the public life was meritorious and good, an opportunity to, if you were interested, to do something perhaps worthwhile, at least to make a contribution. I had thought that I would follow the traditional steps, like a municipal officer, district officer, then perhaps a state legislature or some other office. It seemed to me that there was an opportune time in the political environment of 1959 for an unknown individual to successfully seek that office. As a matter of fact, we missed the first primary by some 15,000 votes, and I think the general consensus at that time was if I had been in a second, I would undoubtedly have been successful.
If you had to characterize the state of Mississippi politics at the moment, how would you do it?
In a state of flux, a great deal of indecision, continuing state of divisiveness, to some extent of groping. It's difficult not to identify blocks of identifiable voters having equally identifiable leadership. There are, of course, two national officers, Senator Eastland and Senator John Stennis, who have a very strong following in the state. And there are other individuals, but the Democratic Party as such, badly splintered. The Republican Party, having, except in national elections, been relatively unsuccessful. A state of uncertainty, succinctly.
The general view we've got in Mississippi is that if someone discuss the single greatest change since 1948, it would be the emergence of the black vote insofar as politics in Mississippi is
undoubtedly
concerned. And in your own campaign for governor, I believe Charles Evers running as a third party of
independent
status, his advice to blacks in that runoff was to boycott it.
In the primary election, it was.
Right, in the primary election.
Well, in the second primary. That
second
is
primary,
correct.
Right.
That is correct.
What do you think would have been the effect, the political effect, if he had advised blacks to either to support the best candidate as they saw it or to support either of the two candidates?
I don't think it would have made any difference. I think, as a matter of fact, they did participate. Very active. And I do not think his admonition had any significant bearing at all. And I must confess that I also think it was a public admonition and that privately that was not the case. This may be a very subjective conclusion on my part.
I looked at some voting returns and from the 15, I'm not sure the number, but it was not any great study I made. Mm-hmm. It was going through some for 45 minutes. And anyway, in those counties, it seemed it was about 15 in which, this is from the Institute of Politics,
mm-hmm.
their study,
mm-hmm.
15 or so counties with 50% or more
mm-hmm.
black registration. I think only three of them had more than 50% participation. Uh-huh. And in the majority of those counties, you got a majority of the vote. Uh-huh. But that's inconclusive of anything, uh-huh. really.
But again, my conclusion is to some extent objective. As far as we can determine the people who, black people who participated in politics, not necessarily those identified as, particularly in past years, the last decade, as black leaders such as Aaron Henry, Mayor Evers, and others, but leadership at a lower level, it appeared to me they participated just as freely as they had done prior to that time.
Did you analyze the vote to come to any conclusion as to how it split?
Race-wise?
Right.
Not particularly. We did to some extent, and we felt that imported areas like Hinds County, that it went rather predominantly for Mr. Waller. And you see, one county like that would offset several of the 15, which you
right.
mentioned a few minutes ago. We thought in the more densely populated areas that it went rather strongly for Mr. Waller. That was by overlay of precinct over the county map. And again, that was our own analysis. And by no means scientific or precise.
Do you feel that the conflict between the regular Democrats and the Loyalists will be resolved before the 76th convention?
No, I do not.
It'll be resolved after that convention or sometimes?
That's an extremely difficult problem to realistically appraise. I have felt with very strong misgiving for years that we would ultimately drift to two parties racially oriented, that is, a black party and a white party, regardless of the label that it may have. I think this would be extremely unfortunate if it did occur. In time, it's entirely possible that the Democratic Party will again become cohesive, including black and white. And as a matter of fact, to a lesser extent, blacks will participate in the Republican Party more than they have done now since many, many years ago, when the Republican Party was predominantly black. I do not think that will happen in the next two or three years. But over a period of time, I think the opportunity does exist.
So you think that it's unlikely that you will end up into two parties, one basically black and basically white?
I'm a little more hopeful about it now than I would have been 2 years ago, and I cannot cite any specific that has changed my thinking. It may be that the crescendo of noise lessened after the last Democratic convention, and I'm just not as aware of the friction that existed. It may still be there, as a matter of fact. I do think that a number of white and black people scattered throughout the state would like to see a party, not say the Democratic Party, or political parties, which were not aligned simply on ethnic polarization.
I think
there are a number of those.
If you had been elected governor, how much priority would that have been in your mind to resolve that split?
I would have been hopeful that it could have been resolved. I had a problem that perhaps confronts or has at least confronted other people in politics in our state when we come to the national level. My sympathies have been in the past with the Republican candidates, and that created a very difficult personal situation for me. I thought that if I had been governor, having participated in the effort to do so as a Democrat in the state Democratic Party, I would have had an obligation, which I would have attempted to discharge, to create a working relationship so that we could have gone to the convention as a group, black and white, representing Mississippi Democrats. There was some hope that that could be done. I think the manner in which the quota and other requirements were superimposed in the last Democratic National Convention would perhaps have thwarted it regardless of the effort. It was resented not only here, it was resented nationwide for other reasons. Youth, women, whatever your particular criticism may have been. It was a factor here, of course, very strong.
Do you have any plans to return to the political candidate role?
I don't actually know it. As I tell people who call me, it seems to be daily and nightly now. We're approaching an election in 1975, you know, that I simply do not know. I have avoided, deliberately so, encouraging people about the state, friends, participants in other campaigns, from getting into discussions about whether I should or should not participate again in politics, particularly a gubernatorial campaign. I would think that I have said whatever I could say to the people of this state, having made the effort 3 times. And I doubt that I should tax them with having to listen 4 times.
I presume you're probably getting calls from both Republicans and Democrats.
Yes, yes I am. And the tempo begins to pick up now. And when you move anywhere about the state and make a talk, which I have curtailed dramatically for the last 2.5 years, inevitably that's the question you're asked.
It would. Do you have an answer in your own mind at this point?
No, I do not. I was entirely honest. These people, many of them, are very, very close to me.
Well, I mean an answer in your own mind, not only whether or not you would run, but if you ran, what as?
I do not know that either. I would, under the present situation, I probably would do as I've done in the past, but I declare I don't know. I'm not sure that's a fair approach to that campaign. As I indicated a while ago, in 71, in the gubernatorial election, I ran under the Democratic machinery and in its primaries, and yet my sympathies were not with the Democratic Party in the presidential election. Of course, that's a lot of things that have happened since then.
What effect do you think Watergate is going to have on the development of the Republican Party in this state?
I think it has been damaging to it. While I do not believe it will destroy the party, particularly not as hardcore faithful. It will make, a significant difference during the next several years, the immediate future at least. I think it will make it more difficult for them to field candidates for congressional offices, particularly. It will have some influence adversely in state elections.
Do you think it will, in addition to that, will it also just deter people from switching?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I do think so.
Do you just think it has overall a minimum slowing down effect?
Yes. As a matter of fact, switching had become, had gained some momentum in this area, which I think has slowed perceptibly.
Is the old Delta versus Hills competition more or less dead, or is it still pretty much alive?
Dormant to a large extent. Occasionally, it becomes a problem. but not very frequently. To the extent it existed, say, in the 30s and 40s, and even into the 50s, no, it is not. Occasionally it crops up. You will not hear it directly in legislative debate, but the undertone of the suggestion is there. But not to any extent as it has been in the past.
Considering that the institutional power that rests in the legislature in Mississippi, what would a governor have to do to effectively govern, and by that I simply mean to effectively get across his programs?
Have a personal rapport with his individual membership, so strong that he could influence very, very strongly their implementation of the programs that he considered important. We are an extremely weak governor. Our group, I do not mean the incumbent, the office I refer to, is extremely weak and continues to be weakened. The legislature continues to create boards, commissions, agencies, which are in the first place duplicative and wasteful, and secondly providing that much of the membership will come out of the legislature, which I think is very, very unfortunate. It continues to dilute the executive branch, and I think also it to some extent corrupts, and I do not mean that in the immoral sense or unethical sense. The responsibility and role of the individual legislator, if he occupies the executive positions and agencies, boards and commissions, then he funds as a legislator those agency boards and commissions, and he describes his prerogatives and his authority. It is, again, not in an ethical sense, it is corrupting to the legislative process, and most unfortunate. It continues, however, to be first noticeable in its continuing erosion of gubernatorial influence. At the present, as we're now situated, a personal rapport, strong, strong personal leadership. One of the, and this perhaps is not invited and is not pertinent, things that I regretted that in our unsuccessful campaign 71. I had developed a very close working relationship with the legislature and with the heads of most of the agencies that I thought would give a governor one opportunity to start on the basis of mutual respect and friendship that would have afforded a real opportunity. And it happens occasionally, and I felt it was happening in that situation. That's probably outside this interview.
No, it's fine. This is outside the interview. To what do you attribute your loss in that race?
Several things. One, I ran a very poor campaign. There was no freshness to it. I had done a great deal of the governor's former appearances, held his speaking engagements, as well as my own. I had been before the state constantly for, well, 4 years and even prior to that time. Never conceivable occasion, and I just, if I had been a voter, why would I go listen to Charlie Sullivan talk? For one thing, and that spilled over into the campaign. There was not an enthusiasm and a freshness about it, I thought. I thought that the administration of Governor Williams terminated, as is rather traditional, with the incumbent Governor Williams being a very unpopular political figure. I could have disassociated myself from him during the administration by doing so very deliberately and very publicly, which I thought would have been disastrous. It would have destroyed any effort he had in his administration of Lieutenant Governor in the interest of a future campaign had taken that course of action. So I was necessarily a part of his administration, and that had a very strong effect. I think at that time there was a very strong feeling in the state here, in fact in the southern area, and perhaps nationwide, which I think is now strengthened by Watergate and related incidents. Seeking public people to place in public office who have not been, quote, politicians, end quote. And of course I had become a
figure
related to politics over these years since 1959. I thought that played a role in it. There were other contributing factors, and I would think those are the major ones.
How significant was the fact that some of the Eastland supported your opponent?
Extremely significant. Not necessarily in the number of votes that were directly swayed by the knowledge, unadmitted, that Senator Eastland was supporting Mr. Waller. But the fact that the machinery and the financing and the competency to conduct that campaign came from that source or through that source. I was motivated by that source.
What are the sources of money that he can tap for a political campaign for candidates he backs?
Well, I would not say or attempt to catalog or identify specific sources. But a man who's been an incumbent of the United States Senate since the mid-1940s and by simply making known his wishes in a political campaign, I create a very substantially favorable money situation for that candidate. It does not have to be done by a senator calling XYZ and say, contribute so many dollars to such a campaign. And I suspect it's not ever done in that manner. But the fact that that's the way he wants the election to be decided is productive of cash. Very much so.
If you had that campaign to run over again, what do you think you would do to create that freshness that you were talking about? Could it be done, or was it just a situation you were caught in?
Some of it could have been done, yes. I could have taken a more vigorous attitude about many of the things that were said in a campaign. I was, you know, the advertising for Mr. Waller's done very, very well, and it was the identification of myself with important people, rich people, influential people in the state capitol, and so I could have handled that rather than just let it ride by. I mentioned it one time in a campaign. And a lot of the other things that were done, I could have been a more vigorous, tough, hard-nosed politician or campaigner than I had always been in the past. I could have perhaps been a lot stronger on the specifics of the next 4 years. Perhaps took the position that people knew me so well and knew my attitude about everything. Well, that is, not everything, but that you would be concerned with. I could have avoided doing some things like I did. For example, both of us were asked at different times on educational television, what our attitude would be about blacks on the highway patrol. Mr. Waller ducked that question, and I said, absolutely. They will be there, and they will be in other positions of governmental responsibility. I took a strong position on the maintenance of public education, although I had been basically responsible for the creation here in Clarksdale of a private school. I'd been the chairman of the board for years. Many people resented that strong support of public education, thinking that it was an attack on private elementary and secondary education. Some other things like that could have been done differently. I do not know what I could have done.
In your both political and legal judgment, do you think
the
open primary law will be implemented in Mississippi?
I would not now be surprised that it is. Now, how long it will survive is another question.
Well, is it going to have to go be tested first in the U.S. Supreme Court before it gets implemented?
Quite likely, because it no doubt will be presented to the district court again, if matter. No doubt will go to the United States Supreme Court.
To have upheld by the Supreme Court.
Sir?
If upheld by the Supreme Court, you said you don't know how long it would last. Does that mean how long the legislature would stick with it? Or
that's correct.
Out?
That's right.
You think they may be less happy with it after it goes
in? I'm not sure that the people would be happy with that type of election over a period of time.
How do you characterize the administration of John Bell Williams?
I think by hindsight it will come to be considered a good administration.
For what reasons?
I think he did some things, in education I felt it was very strong. Unprecedented appropriations, a lot of attention to it. A very determined effort to improve the highway system. And partially successful. In other areas, I thought overall his administration accomplished a great deal. There were some suggestions from time to time, as there is in any administration, that of dishonesty. I personally believe that he was absolutely honest for my 4 years of observation. I left with that impression. I thought at times his public communication created animosity for him when actually the man was trying to do things worthwhile. That was probably not the opposite of the whole period.
Was this on social issues primarily?
Yeah. I think the pronouncements so frequently were not a true representation of what uttered by him on what the man was trying to do. And again, that's a personal opinion just based on being right down the hall for 4 years.
What do you think he was trying to do in that area?
I think he's still a very staunch segregationist, but had come to recognize less than many others of us that times had in fact changed and that the state was going to change whether he resisted it or not. He was, as I just said, though, still very strong in his conviction about that, of course.
How do you assess the role of the R&D Center in shaping the future development of the state?
I think overall it has been good. It continues to become embroiled, unwittingly perhaps, politically, and is a point of controversy with every administration. If it could in some way be to some extent insulated from that, then isolation is not possible nor desirable. Entire insulation. But protected may be a better word. And too much interference, I think it could have, or has had, I think it would tend to have a healthy influence and make a major contribution. I do not believe that the existence or presence of the R&D Center will appear as politicians sometimes like to say, the future greatness of the state. Yeah. But I think it makes a contribution, and a very significant contribution.
How do you characterize the present state of race relations in this state, and where do you see them heading?
I think it's good. And by that I speak comparatively of necessity. And barring some irresponsible real tragedy, some incident just begins as an incident and changes into a real, as I said a moment ago, a confrontation type situation. I believe it will improve. I think most of us in the state want everybody to economically progress. For everybody to have better homes, not necessarily bigger cars anymore, but cars. A decent opportunity. And I think that extends to the black community. In fact, if that is not achieved by the black community, the future of the state is very limited. And I think a lot of Mississippians are coming to realize that.
It is popularly believed in Mississippi among politicians that Senator Eastland opposed you because somewhere you said something that he felt slighted him. And that may be a general way of putting it, because I'm not sure exactly what it is. Do you think that's the case, or is it something more than that?
I don't actually know. I think no tangible, the only real incident that can ever happen. I think involved the Kennedy-Johnson campaign when I was an independent elector, to which he objected, but that was just the difference of our approach, that I did not support the Kennedy election or the Johnson election. I was an independent elector in the state. And
that was the independence for Harry Byrd's slate?
Yes. And I do think he objected to that, but insofar as forming the basis of any continuing over the years animosity, I would be surprised.
If the conflict between the Loyalists and the Regulars is resolved, or when it's resolved, presumably sometime it's going to be resolved, mm-hmm. What sort of coalition do you see forming the future Democratic Party in the state?
I don't know. It will change very considerably. For one thing, by the fact that, let's assume some Jason does not run again, that plays a role in what that coalition would be. And it's difficult for me to give you a real answer to that.
If Senator Eastland does not run again, is that going to create a political power vacuum in the state?
To some extent.
Is his successor, whoever that is, likely to fill that role?
Not with the power that Senator Eastland has.
No.
Not for much of that strength, as I believe it to exist, the foundation is in the county government organizations or positions such as the boards of supervisors, the chancellor and secretary clerks, the justice of peace. And to some extent, these organizations or the individuals who occupy them do not have the influence over the electorate that they did years ago. And that is changing this.
As time goes by.
Continues to do so. And I think that's one source of that, of his very strong influence, and it is strong.
So you think the power is likely to become more diffused?
Yes, it will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How important, in your judgment, for the political well-being of the state, is constitutional revision?
I don't think it's critical. I think much of the things that, many of the things that need to be done can be done without that. experience of most states recently has been that I'm not certain that they had a better constitution when they finished. The tendency now is, as I have observed it, is to attempt to have the Constitution all-inclusive, to cover all of the problems of the current period and all the years ahead, and to cover all of them, which I think is absolutely impossible. And many of the Constitutions, at least it seems to me, have been written in recent years attempting to do that. We almost, ours is too, in my opinion, broadener.
Do you see any chance at all of the executive getting more power in the state? Or get it becoming stronger institutionally?
Only over a period of time, and if you have a succession of individual governors who are able to exert a real strong leadership with the legislature. As a matter of fact, if this were offered as a constitutional change now, it would fail. In my opinion.
Fail because of the legislature or because of the public?
Even if you could get the legislature to offer, which is the easiest way to get an amendment, of course, before the people, let's call it an amendment.
Right.
I don't think the people understand that at present. And now we're in an environment or an atmosphere of being afraid of the chief executive. And I don't think he passed today in Mississippi.
How viable do you consider the Republican Party at this time? How much of a threat do you consider them in a statewide election? Say in 75. If they run a full slate of able candidates, let us say.
I think they would elect out some people to various offices. I would, looking at it now, be surprised that they would elect a Nelson. That's based on today.
You anticipate there'll be both more blacks and more Republicans in the legislature in the coming years?
Yes. And I think the Republican membership would have increased more in 76 than it might now due to the problem we were discussing there, the national problems. Back in the party.
You see any future gains in the immediate future in the Republicans in the congressional delegation?
No, I do not.
Is anything
one thing is traditional in Mississippi. Not to ask an incumbent. We haven't done that in a long time. I don't say that's good or bad. It's just the attitude has been how people have been taught, rather, or indoctrinated rather thoroughly with congressional seniority. And there's only been one who lost an election in a long, long time in this state.
Well, tied in with that, in your political judgment, if in 1972, if the White House had given Gil Carmichael the same sort of support it gave two successful Republican congressional candidates, strong endorsements, really full support,
financial
and otherwise, would it have made enough difference to have resulted in a Republican victory in that race?
In my opinion, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Got 47%, didn't it?
No, I think got about 40.
I was thinking a little over, maybe 41. I think it would have made a difference.
Yeah.
Is there anything we haven't discussed that you wanted to comment on that might
further enlighten?
No, that's something like
why do you think that Waller got you said he got the Hinds County black vote. You think he got a majority of the black vote statewide in the second primary?
I think so. Again, that's a subjective conclusion because there was no way we could really tell. And in fact, we did not try that hard to tell. The campaign was over.
The precinct data is awfully hard to get in
Mississippi isn't recharged.
But it's available.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Or is it reported to Secretary of State's office by precinct? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, it is. Okay.
I was not aware of that.
End interview. No more transcription. This tape.